This is WMUK's West Southwest. I'm Gordon Evans. Coming up, WMUK's Erlene McMichael speaks with the assistant director of Griffin Place in Kalamazoo about the first ever suicide prevention walk happening this weekend. But first, as communities look for ways to boost economic development, can liberal arts colleges and the towns that have them provide some of the answers? A panel discussion today at Albion College will explore that and other issues. Among the panelists will be Richard Longworth, senior fellow at the Chicago Council on Global Affairs. He's the author of Caught in the Middle, America's Heartland in the Age of Globalism, and a former reporter for the Chicago Tribune. Richard Longworth, thank you for being with us.
Gordon, it's a pleasure.
So if a Midwest city has been facing years of declining jobs, perhaps industry has moved out, those sort of things, what can it do to reinvent itself?
There are a lot it can do. I've always encouraged people to look regionally instead of just focusing on your own town, which too many of us try to do here in the Midwest, or for that matter, on our own state, and feel we're in competition with the folks next door. We really have to leverage all of our strengths wherever we find them. Now, this can be many different strengths, a history of manufacturing or a strong agricultural economy that could be the basis for new industries. It could be scenic attractions that can bring smart, educated people in. It can certainly be local colleges and universities and community colleges, too, institutions of higher learning. We are in the knowledge economy now. The old days of, a strong back and alarm clock would get you a job and a lifetime career, that has gone forever. And so much of us throughout the Midwest, certainly in your area of Michigan, know the results of that. We're in the knowledge economy. It's going to take brains. It's going to take ideas. It's going to take skilled people who know how not only to run these companies and start them, but just to work in them.
Now, you'll be speaking at Albion College. The town of Albion has seen its share of job losses over the years, in part some of that manufacturing. What could the city leaders of Albion do if they look towards that college that they have in town that might create some new economic vitality?
Well, what's happening in Albion this week is the inauguration of a new president, Maury Ditzler. And he comes from Monmouth College in Monmouth, Illinois. Two colleges about the same size, two towns are about the same size, and they have similar, fairly disastrous recent economic histories. What Maury Ditzler did in Monmouth was consciously to make the college an asset to the town itself. That is, reaching out, trying to establish ties not only between the college and the town, but between the college and the surrounding region of western Illinois, to encourage students to get out and work and study the region, make it a laboratory for their studies, try and set up better relationships with the town. In other words, turn the university or the college into an asset, an intellectual and economic asset for the city as it tries to rebuild itself. There are several ways you can do this. One is simply using the brain power in the college to set up new businesses. Another is to, because this is a liberal arts college, you really got to understand what happens. We not only need our STEM experts, our computer whizzes, the financial experts from Wall Street. We need our liberal arts people, the historians, the economists, the sociologists, simply to explain, tell us where we've been and how we can get back on the right track. The college, if it has good relationships with the town, can be a meeting place. It can be a central gathering point where people in the town and the region come together to discuss their common present and their common future. It can be many things. It's not easy. A lot of colleges can't do this. In a lot of towns, there has been a traditional town gown barrier. The college pretends it really doesn't belong in this rather declining old town. The old town really resents the uppity airs of the people at the college, and there is that barrier. This has to be overcome, and I've seen it done. I saw Maury Ditzler do it in Monmouth.
Is that economic ripple effect that you would get from a small private college of a few thousand students going to be much different from what you would get from, say, a state university, which might have tens of thousands of students and probably more in the way of research programs.
No, the a place like Ann Arbor or, say, the University of Illinois or Purdue, these are big research universities, and they probably should be doing more of our research, possibly less of our teaching. There's a former president of the University of Michigan named James Duderstadt who's written a lot on this. And his feeling is these big research universities like Michigan or Michigan State should really be concentrating on research because it's this research into the new economy, into bioscience, biotech, nanotechnology, all these new areas, communications, that if we're going to bring the Midwest back as a region, it's going to take this big thinking and this big research to do it. A small college like Albion is not a research university and doesn't pretend to be. So what can it do? It can encourage people there locally and, again, in the region, working with Kalamazoo, working with Western Michigan, working with the assets in the region, to set up smaller focuses of the economy. In a town the size of Albion, for instance, doesn't take an awful lot of businesses really to have a jolt in the economy. If the college can reach out to young people in the town, if it can work through them, maybe it can't charge them the higher tuition rates, but it can work with them and try to get them to set up local businesses there. It can work with local citizens. Too often people, young people who have a good idea for setting up a business, can't find the financing. Or they can't find people to talk to who can give them any help. They may have a good idea, but they don't know banking, they don't know accounting, they don't know tax laws. What a university can do by bringing the community together is to get bankers together to lend money for these good ideas, to get accountants there to help these young people with their tax problems. They can work with the town itself to make space available. Now, I'm going to be in Albion for the first time this week, so I really don't know the town. But if it's anything like a lot of other Midwestern towns, there are some vacant stores up and down the main street there. Okay, turn some of those stores over to the college or to a community college and use them as places where young people can set up businesses. All this would be subsidized. A lot of it would fail. That's okay. You got to have some failures, but you'll have some successes too. If the college can work maybe to bring in young people on a part-time basis or an unofficial basis to give them the kind of leg up that they need. Not all of us are going to be history professors. There's a lot of good ideas out there, but it takes a lot of imagination, and it takes a whole community working together, which a college can do.
You mentioned earlier some of the work done at Monmouth College. Can you give us maybe some other examples out there, if there are any, of win-win sort of collaborations between communities and the colleges in them?
It really differs, Gordon. It's interesting to see. There's some colleges that just aren't interested at all. Right next door to Monmouth is Galesburg, Illinois, and that's Knox College, a very distinguished small liberal arts school. Galesburg has had all the problems you can imagine. Knox College basically doesn't want to know. It considers itself a sort of island of intellectual excellence and pretends that the surrounding community doesn't exist. Up north in Michigan, around Midland City and Saginaw, places like that, there's a community college called Delta College that is pretty much equidistant from the three major cities up there. And it sees itself as the natural meeting point for to bring the three towns together. These are three towns that have never really cooperated very much. They're all involved in the same industry, but in their ornery Midwestern way, they just refuse to cooperate. Well, Delta sees itself as a means of bringing these together. In Grinnell, Iowa, Grinnell is, again, is a small town, and Grinnell College is an excellent small liberal arts college. For a long time, Grinnell College ignored Grinnell town to the degree that in its buildings, all of its buildings, the doors open onto a central quad, pretty much turning their back to the rest of the town. Okay, they're getting around that. They've worked very hard with the townspeople to revitalize the downtown, for instance. Like a lot of these towns, the downtown was collapsing. They'd lost their movie theater. The college really went out of its way to try and reopen a movie theater downtown, which has stimulated other businesses because people have a reason to come downtown. Beloit College in Beloit, Wisconsin, is doing some good work. Down in Wooster, Ohio, there's stuff going on. At this program on this week at Albion, one of the speakers there will be Byron White, a former colleague of mine at the Chicago Tribune, now an officer at Cleveland State College, which again, for many years, kind of pretended it didn't belong to Cleveland, but has turned that around in a big way and is trying to cooperate with the city to bring it back. Cleveland's a bigger place. It's got bigger problems, but the process is the same.
Now, earlier this year, I found a post on your blog about the false promise of EDS and MEDS, which was communities relying on colleges and hospitals to boost their economy. What's the difference between being overly reliant on that sort of formula and yet finding ways to make it work effectively for both sides?
Nothing wrong with EDS and MEDS, higher education and hospitals, but we're too reliant on it. I mentioned Muncie, Indiana. That the big companies there used to be Ball, the glass company, BorgWarner, things like that. The big industries there now are Ball State College and Ball Memorial Hospital. Again, these are largely government supported. They can be a force in the economy. They can often be spin-off places for good ideas, but they are not industry. They're not part of the private economy. We have here in the Midwest, or had, an economy that was built up by entrepreneurs, by factories. It may have been rough and ready, but, you know, as in Michigan, it provides a whole lot of jobs that are going to go away. Its meds aren't bad, but they're not going to replace that. Also, colleges are somewhat a means to an end. Colleges don't exist as themselves, but they exist as launching pads, not only for their students, but for ideas. So if they exist out there by themselves, a force in the economy, certainly, but not really adding that to that economy. They're also, interestingly, colleges are generally considered a good thing to have, and this is quite true, but I think they're overestimated as a force in the economy. There have been studies showing that towns that have colleges or even big universities do not necessarily have strong economies. The universities can pay their faculty members and their officers quite good salaries, but they also employ a lot of people in buildings and grounds and things like that that pay low salaries. They're not often a source of really good jobs for the town themselves. Takes more. This is no reason for a town not to make use of its college, but it can't assume that the college is going to carry the whole economic weight.
We've heard you talk quite a bit about regionalism. That's also a big theme in your book, Caught in the Middle. I guess I'm wondering if the Midwest is still struggling with this in ways that other areas of the country do not, the idea of thinking more outside your town, outside your county, outside your state. Is that something that still seems to plague the Midwest?
Oh, Gordon, we're Midwesterners here. We're ornery. We will help our neighbor if a tornado comes along and knocks down his house. But otherwise, we really don't want to know. You have towns fighting towns, counties fighting counties, states fighting states. I think we're all familiar with this phenomenon of each state trying to raid factories and raid jobs from the state next door. In Michigan, for instance, pretending you're in competition with Ohio and Indiana. You're not. The real competition is 10,000 miles away on the other side of the world and is eating our lunch. We really have to work together on this, and it's not in our nature, alas. What can we do on this? I think we have to really give some thought to this idea of regions. How can Albion work together with Jackson and work together with Kalamazoo and work together, the college working with Western Michigan? There are assets here that have to be put together. What is a natural region? Maybe it's along the I-94 there. Maybe it's an historical thing. It can be a big region. The Midwest is a region. The Midwest is a region basically because we've always done two big things. which are heavy industry and intensive agriculture, and globalization has tossed them right up in the air. We are suffering together as a region. We rose together as a region during the Industrial Revolution for 100 years. We've been declining as a region ever since the Rust Belt era and the now globalization. And if we're going to recover, it's going to be recovering as a region, making use of our regional assets, the Great Lakes being an obvious example. And then there are smaller regions. Detroit is trying to work with Southeast Michigan there. The Cleveland area is trying to work together. Northeast Ohio. Up in Wisconsin, there are several effective regions. One is called the New North. It stretches up the Fox River Valley. And they are concentrating on carving out a specialty for the region in wind turbines and the equipment for wind turbines. Here in Chicago, we are trying to act as a region, embracing this, what basically is one big city, one big economic area from Milwaukee south through Chicago and on into northern Indiana. Western Michigan, the Holland-Grand Rapids area, is working together quite effectively as a region. The fact is that Albion is too small. Kalamazoo is too small. Michigan by itself is too small. Chicago by itself is too small to really compete in this great big global economy. We've got 3 million people here in Chicago, which isn't bad. Well, there are 31 cities in China, 31 different cities in China that are all bigger than that. We just simply can't go on our own anymore, so we have to look for all the help we can find, and that's the idea behind this regional stuff. But as I say, it goes against the Midwestern grain.
Richard Longworth, thank you very much for your time.
Gordon, it's been my pleasure.
Richard Longworth is Senior Fellow at the Chicago Council on Global Affairs. Links with more information about today's event at Albion College can be found at WMUK.org.
You're listening to West Southwest. I'm Earlene McMichael. Joining us is Lacey Lyons, Assistant Director at Griffin Place, a Kalamazoo agency offering services for those in conflict and in crisis. Welcome.
Thank you.
She's also the lead organizer of the agency's first suicide prevention walk that's taking place this Saturday. I was reading through some of the materials that your organization provides, and it says that 5 million people nationally have been directly affected by the issue of suicide.
That statistic in particular is referring to survivors of suicide, individuals who have experienced the loss of a loved one or a friend to suicide. That statistic, we suspect, is on the low end. They figure about 6 survivors for every suicide death. And as almost everybody knows, when somebody does die by suicide, that scope reaches much farther than 6 individuals. There are a lot of survivors nationwide, as there are locally, and this is an issue that affects people on a daily basis. Things come up in the news that draw attention to the very important topics of mental health and to suicide prevention. But what we also know is it impacts us on a local scale and on an individual scale every day.
Can you tell me about that?
Well, Michigan's statistics are actually very close to what is average for the country. We're neither high nor low when it comes to where Michigan falls statistically.
I was reading a statistic in an article earlier this month that was in the Chicago Tribune, and it said that suicide is the third leading cause of death for those between the ages of 10 and 24, and that's according to the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. And in a national survey, it said that 16% of high school students reported seriously considering suicide. Clearly, this is an issue that really needs some more public awareness. My understanding is this is the first time that you are holding the walk. Why this year?
This year, we really evaluated what kinds of fundraising events we hold, what makes sense for us, and what does the community need. And it makes a lot of sense for Griffin Place to get behind the cause and to get behind the issue of suicide prevention, because since 1970, we have been providing services, a number of different services that work to prevent suicide locally.
Can you talk about some of those services that you provide?
Yes, of course. We offer a number of different services at Griffin Place. A few that I would want to be sure to highlight In our community and nationwide, we offer 211. 211 is a nationwide program, and in our area, we do take dial 211 calls. 211 is a program that offers information and referrals for local resources. So people that are looking for assistance with any number of human services needs can dial 211 to get connected to local resources. And 211 is also, I should say, a 24/7 available service. We also have our crisis line, and that number is 381-HELP, H-E-L-P. It's 269-381-4357. But 381-HELP is what people in our area really recognize as our local crisis line. That is also a 24/7 service. Every day of the year, we have wonderful volunteers here taking calls from people who need emotional support, who need assistance sorting through their thoughts, who are feeling overwhelmed, hopeless. When we say crisis line, people do oftentimes think of callers who may be thinking of suicide themselves or calling on behalf of somebody else that they're concerned is suicidal. But truly, it's a line for people in any kind of crisis. And what's a crisis to me and what's a crisis to you is not necessarily the same as a crisis for my neighbor. So anything that is really putting a lot of stress on an individual is a good reason to call a crisis line.
Let's go back to the issue of the walk, which is suicide prevention. Let's talk on the prevention end. What might be some of the warning signs that people can look out for? Again, when I was looking through your literature, it was indicating that in most cases, though obviously not in all, that individuals are displaying warning signs.
Right, right. You know, another one of the programs that we offer and have for years at Griffin Place is the Gatekeeper Program. The Gatekeeper Program is a suicide prevention educational curriculum that we offer in middle schools and high schools in our area. And speaking of suicide prevention and speaking of what do you look for, that's what we're teaching kids every year. And the skills that we are giving to youth through this program are really the very same skills that we would teach folks of any age. We want to make sure that what I always tell people is that if you're worried about someone, you're probably worried for a reason. And people are experts on their friends. And if you're worried, if you think you see signs of depression, if you have anything in your mind that causes you to be concerned, sometimes people hesitate to bring up mental health. And sometimes people hesitate to ask if somebody has been thinking of suicide. But it's very important to, if you wonder, don't wait. Ask the question. Engage them in conversation. In addition to reaching out and letting people know that you are there to listen to them, it's also very important to know what your resources are and to know where to find help. And you can locate resources on griffin.org, our website, and actually search our online tool for local resources. You can search keywords. You put in your zip code and keywords such as depression or mental health treatment or suicide prevention, and all of those local resources are going to come up. That, of course, is in addition to the options of calling 211 or 381-HELP.
If someone is listening right this second, there could be someone that they're interacting with right now that is going through this issue. What is it that they can do right at this second? Because one of the things that I was reading again in your materials, it talked about not leaving the person alone.
That's right. I would say if you wonder, don't wait. If you're concerned, engage them. And if somebody is seeing warning signs, some of the top warning signs tend to be very obvious ones. If somebody is talking about death, dying, or suicide, or wishing that they were dead, or something along those lines, if somebody is looking for means, if somebody is talking about being a burden to others or not being able to go on or having no reason to live, those are those very obvious warning signs that would generally catch the public's attention, right? But sometimes things are a little more vague and a little more subtle, but they oftentimes will still make us wonder, I wonder what's going on with that person. And if we catch any of those things, and if a listener at this time has somebody that has popped into their head and wondered, I wonder if this person is okay, we would advise you to ask them, and we would advise you to call the helpline. Not leaving a person alone is particularly important. If a person through conversation is explaining to you, yes, I have thought about suicide, if perhaps they do have a plan, we absolutely want to support them and bring in individuals who can help to keep them safe. And sometimes that does necessitate a call to 381 help to figure out, how do we do that? How do we keep this person safe? One of the things that we teach youth through the Gatekeeper program is that this is not a problem that we can fix on our own. We, meaning I as a person in crisis, or we, meaning I support my friends or family that might be in crisis. We need to reach outside of ourselves to get the resources and the help needed to not only get us through the moment, but to get us through the moments in the future and get us back to feeling better.
There was a point you said earlier. Did you recommend calling 211 or calling the crisis line if someone encountered someone that they thought was suicidal?
In an emergency situation, if there is imminent danger, we would, of course, recommend that somebody dials 911 to get immediate assistance.
Mm-hmm.
But in the event that you have a person in crisis, depressed, maybe considering suicide, we would recommend you call 381-HELP.
And just so that we give a sense of who they might be talking to on the other end, what kind of training, who is it that they're talking to on the other end?
We have both paid staff as well as a wonderful group of volunteers who are very specialized and well-trained in taking these crisis calls. Our crisis workers in our contact center are required to go through extensive training in order to respond with compassion and respect, and in order to help people sort through what it is that they're experiencing.
What are some of the options beyond calling a crisis hotline? For example, you talk about depression, and there's ways of managing these things. What are some of the options that people might consider?
One thing to really remember when we talk about depression and we talk about other mental illnesses is, just like physical illnesses that come to mind for people right away, the analogy that we use with young people often is, if you had a broken leg, would you try and fix that on your own? Or would you know you needed to see a professional in order to help that heal? Depression and other mental illnesses work the same way. They are physical conditions that we can't try and fix on our own because we need professionals to help that heal. So we really need to remind ourselves, each other, our neighbors, as a community, that reaching outside of ourselves for that kind of assistance is very critical. It's very important because these kinds of things are elevated to a level where we do need assistance with them, and that has to be okay. We have to start to work through some of the stigma associated with mental illness and with asking for help, because asking for help is really the best thing that we can do for ourselves and for our friends who are struggling.
And what would that help look like?
It depends on the person. That's one of the good things about calling 381-HELP is they can talk about options and they can talk about resources. So these are the numbers that you can call in your community. It may be a matter of a support group. It may be a matter of individualized treatment. It may be a matter of...
Meaning counseling. Counseling?
Yes, counseling.
Talk therapy.
Mm-hmm. Maybe a matter of make an appointment with a primary care physician who can then refer on to specialists as needed to assess, is there a medication required in this case? Is this a case that could be kind of remedied or benefit simply from talk therapy? Because it could be one, it could be the other, it could be both.
Well, as we close right now, is there any final thoughts that you would like to share with us?
I do want people to know that another program that Griffin Place offers is the Survivors of Suicide Support Group, and it is the only support group of its kind in the Kalamazoo area. There are others, and I think there's one in Grand Rapids, and I'm not sure where the next closest one is, but we offer that for folks who have lost somebody to suicide, and we want to make sure, especially with the walk this week, that people know that that service is available. It's actually nationally Suicide Prevention Week this week, which is how we ended up choosing this particular Saturday for our suicide prevention walk for that event, because we wanted to get involved in this national movement to draw attention to suicide prevention and build awareness and education locally here.
Ms. Lyons, thank you for joining me.
Thank you so much for having me.
Lacey Lyons is the assistant director of Griffin Place in Kalamazoo. She spoke with WMUK's Erlene McMichael. A link with more information about this weekend's first ever suicide prevention walk can be found at WMUK.org. This is WMUK's West Southwest. I'm Gordon Evans.